Are you an entrepreneur that would like to quickly free up and create more cash flow and lasting wealth? Welcome to the Chris Miles Money Show. Chris Miles is a cash flow expert and the financial advocate for the entrepreneur. Chris will teach you how to create more freedom and more prosperity right now, not about saving 25 to 40 years from now. It's all about creating wealth and prosperity today. He's been featured on U.S. News, CNN Money, Bankrate.com, interviewed internationally on TV and radio, and has a high reputation for getting his clients fast, life-altering financial results with his company, Money Ripples. Learn more at MoneyRipples.com. Now, here's your host, Chris Miles.
Hello, my fellow Ripplers. This is Chris Miles, your cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor. Welcome you out for a wonderful show today. Hey, a show that's for you and about you. Those of you who work so stinking hard for your money, but you're ready for your money to start working harder for you. Those of you that want that freedom, that cash flow, that prosperity right now, not 30 or 40 years from now, but right now. So you can have that life of freedom to be with those that you love, to do what you love when you want to do it. And so I welcome you guys out today because I know you're not just here about your own freedom, but you know that as you create freedom and prosperity in your own life, that allows you to be able to create more freedom and more prosperity and be able to bless more people's lives and create that ripple effect, which makes you a rippler. So welcome to our show. So grateful for those of you that have been sharing this show, that have been following it. I love just seeing more and more of you guys keep adding to the numbers. I love knowing that we're making a bigger impact and you guys are a big part of that. So thank you for being a part of this cause and this movement, because without you, I'm telling you, like, really, I can't tell you how fired up I am right now, you know, and it wasn't just because of a few weeks back, you know, hearing that guy teaching in my church, you know, about what's wise retirement advice. But I'll tell you, I was just on an episode yesterday, or actually it's going to be aired in a few weeks, but we were recording it yesterday. It was a guy that was a real estate investor. And as we were talking, you know, I talked about really the anti-financial advice that I give, right? And how mainstream financial advice is broken. It's proven not to work. And he, of course, he was in complete agreement, because if you've made any kind of money, like if you're someone that actually has created some wealth, those of you that have already done, I know some of you are, that you've already been doing it. You've already been doing things like other investments, like alternate investing, like with real estate or with other types of things like notes or whatever it might be. You've been doing this other stuff. You already see through it. And I'm so grateful for people that were, you know, business owners as well as investors that questioned me when I was a financial advisor, that called bull on me. Some just did it where they just said, no, thank you. You know, they didn't say anything, but there was others that really challenged me. And I want to talk about those kind of myths today, because, you know, especially the myth about diversification and dollar cost averaging, right? Specifically those two, because, you know, I got brought up when I was listening to that guy teach, and I know it gets brought up a lot. And the truth is that financial advice is just hurting way more than it's helping. That's the honest truth. I mean, right now, I mean, the market just as of today just hit, you know, the S&P 500 just hit 3,000 for the first time in history, right? It just hit a new all-time high. And it's so hard for people to see, especially those that have a short-term vision or only been around noticing these things short-term, less than 10 years. It's so hard to see that this right now is could be the best opportunity to leave the market, right? I'm not recommending that people just jump out of the market right now, but you know, when you think about where it is at a high, it's pretty crazy. And the advice that's been given is just hurting so many people. So let me give you an example of some of these, right? You know, and remember, I was a financial advisor before, like in the early 2000s during the Y2K era. You know, that's when I became a financial advisor, like of the mainstream sort. Did that for 4 years. And I was taught all this stuff. I would teach this stuff like it was somehow revolutionary. I would teach about dollar cost averaging and diversifying and about the market and the returns and everything. And we talked about 1999, where Janus had a fund that did 132%. So it more than doubled your money in 1 year. You know, and even though the market was going down during the recession of Y2K, right? Didn't matter, because, hey, you know, that's it's still amazing. And we would talk about that. Like, yeah, it's got to come back. You know, there's averages, but look at these averages. It's averaged 12% in the small cap stocks since 2000 BC, and large cap stocks were just over 10%. And, you know, yeah, even with the depression, look at this, right? And so I talked to people about how essentially there's never a bad time to not invest, right? Which is brilliant marketing strategy if you think about it. I mean, the way that we were taught as financial advisors to teach you, and that's supposed to be mainstream wisdom, right? You know, from Wall Street. The problem is that it's not true. So for example, let's bring up just about dollar cost averaging. We'll start with this because it's a pretty simple concept. They'll show you, you know, and I show this graph so many times to so many people, right? When I was teaching this stuff, you would show that if the market goes straight up, you're buying shares, but if you're doing like $100 every time, so say that the stock was started at $10 a share, but of course it keeps going up to eventually $100 a share. You went from buying with $100 10 shares, you bought, or $10 a share, you bought 10 shares. But by the time it hit $100 a share, you're only buying one. So it'd show that you actually bought less shares, meaning that your shares aren't worth as much. The one that actually was significant was the one where it started out high, and then those shares went down to like a dollar per share. So essentially like Great Depression type of thing, where it went down 10% or down to 10% of its value, 90% loss. You bought it at a dollar per share, and then it only went up to like $4 a share, and you had more money because you bought a lot of shares. You bought them on sale. So the market's going up. They'll tell you, hey, don't get out of the market because it's going up. When it's going down, they're saying, well, you want to buy more because it's all on sale. You want to buy low, sell high. So buy now. So they're telling you, no matter what the market's doing, buy, 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 buy. And they'll say, don't time the market. Don't time the stock market because, hey, you'll guess wrong. You know, like the guy that showed the numbers, he said, yeah, people have only been earning 1.9% average over the last 20 years, even though the market averaged, quote unquote, averaged 5.3. And although that's the average, that's not the actual. I ran the actual numbers. They're closer to 4% for the last 20 years. And so now he's saying 1.9 was because people try to time the market. They would jump out when it was going down and they would jump back in after it already went up for a while, and they were just bad timers. Now, I do agree with that to some level. I do agree that people aren't great at timing the market. But here's what I do know is that the buy low, sell high is a correct thing, but their method of doing it is more in their self-interest, because that's how they, and especially the companies they work for, get paid. Understand that financial advisors work not for you as a client. They work for the companies they represent. And the companies are the ones that give all the education and the training to these financial advisors that then pass on that training to you. So, of course, a company's going to say, hey, we want more money under management because we charge management fees. We take essentially zero risk. Yeah, we of course, you know, hire money managers stuff to try to attract good talent to get more people's money in. But essentially, it's the sales force of the financial advisor that's really boosting their numbers. And if they can convince you to keep your money in there for the long haul, so if the market goes down, hey, hold on, wait it out, you know, just wait another 10, 15 years for it to come back. And then, you know, maybe you can live off less than the interest, meaning that the money still stays in there. They're still charging you that, you know, on average, 1-2% in fees coming out of your fund every time. And so you got to understand that if you essentially follow the money, right, you're going to realize that financial wisdom, quote unquote, the mainstream Wall Street financial advice, is just a big old sales pitch. It's just teaching you to buy into their game. And it's a game really, really, really you lose and they win. So this dollar cost averaging, think about this. They're telling you now if we were to buy low, sell high, the one thing they had right is, yeah, buy it when it is a dollar per share. Now, I would agree. I mean, if I saw the market tank 90%, I would assure you, I wouldn't put a lot of my money in, but I would probably put some of my money, you know, some of the money I'm willing to risk, right? I would probably put it into the market at that time. You know, I did it with Bitcoin recently. I was like, hey, I see it going down. I actually bought a little Bitcoin. And this is after I had done a show, you know, now it's been almost a year and a half or over a year and a half. I did a show about Bitcoin being crazy when it was getting up to $20,000. Well, I saw it tank down to like close to $3,000. I thought, here's an opportunity, you know, and boom, it shot up. And so I got my money right back out. And the only money that's in there now is just the gamble money, right? Just the gains. And so, you know, yeah, I can see myself doing that if the market were to tank. But see, I would do it after it tanks. And it maybe even goes down a little bit more. Cool. All right. You might buy a little bit more. But I would not do it when it's at a market high. Why in the heck would I want to buy at the high of the market? You know how many people have said, Chris, are you sure real estate's really good right now? Because, I mean, hey, it's the highest it's ever been. You know, what if it starts going down? I hardly ever hear people say that about the stock market. I definitely don't hear financial advisors saying, you know what? The market is so hot right now. It's been so hot for 10 years, almost 10 years straight. You know, the odds are really against you. It's going to keep going up. I think you should wait it out. This is why, like, buying Index Universal Life, people say, hey, should I buy it now? Look at the returns I could get, maybe. Yeah, maybe. But if you're buying at the height of the market, you're buying at the wrong time. You know, again, that would be better if you bought it at the low of the market. And maybe it could beat out on some other things. So all these things that we're buying into is really a load of bull, right? It's really not true. And so, yeah, dollar cost averaging can work. Unfortunately, I wouldn't do it the way that they say, which is always buy. I would say wait for when people are bailing out. And when people bail out, that's when you want to jump in. You know, I'm going to have somebody on my show here pretty soon talking about apartment buildings. You know, the funny thing is that there's a lot of what we refer to as dumb money going in. Dumb money is when, like, the mainstream – well, it's not even mainstream. Let's not even go there because it's not. But there are a lot of people that don't know what they're doing buying into apartment deals because people are raising money for that stuff. Now, it's not saying you can't make money in apartment deals right now, because if right now the best opportunities for apartments are when basically dumb money goes in. When people don't know what they're doing, they mismanage it, and then they try to sell it for a cheaper value, and you know you can bump it up and create instant equity just by getting better management, better profits out of it. Because unlike normal real estate, when you come to, like, properties and things like rentals, you can increase the value by increasing the rents or increasing the profit. The more profit you make, just like any business, the more it's worth. And so there's different things there. So yeah, like there's opportunities that could be happening, you know, where things could start hitting a low. You know, there could be, I guarantee in a few years, you'll probably have people bailing out of apartment buildings because they'll say, ugh, that didn't work so well. Or, man, like, this was harder than I thought, you know, and it's not because it was a bad deal. It's because they were bad investors. And that's the key. So anyways, I won't beat into dollar cost averaging, but I'll say it's kind of a fallacy. It's pretty much a myth. It conceptually makes sense, but the thing that doesn't make sense is how they're applying it, which is buy always, right? And the truth is you should only be buying, if you're going to really be buying something that's that gambling, which it is, stock market you have zero control over, there's no way you can manipulate the returns, then you got to, if you're looking for timing, you don't want to get at the market high, you get in when it's a market low, right? Buy low, sell high. It's that simple. Now, diversification, that's another one I get a lot too. People are like, hey, you should be diversified. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Myth with financial advisement, right? In the financial advising world, their diversification means you buy lots of different mutual funds, which have lots of different stocks in them, and you're supposed to be spreading out the risk. A mutual fund is not diversified. Even buying multiple mutual funds is not diversified. And even if you buy bonds with it, you're still not diversified. The last recession was proof of that. Bonds and stocks both went down during their last recession. Both of them went down. So when people thought they were diversified, they couldn't figure out why they're still losing money. Even now, I have people come to me all the time, and maybe you're one of them, where they say, hey, the market's hitting an all-time high, but my account's not really going up that much. It hasn't really climbed a whole lot more other than the money I've been putting in. The returns aren't as impressive as the market seems to be. And that's across the board. That's what I hear all the time. You do, by the way, you never do get market returns. Even when you invest in things like the S&P 500, right? If you invest in that index, you're still going to get less of a return because you're still going to charge fees. So you're not even getting that 4% average the last 20 years. You might be pulling out maybe 3.5% at best. That's if you're lucky, right? For the last 20 years. Now, I know the market returns are more averaging closer to, you know, if you're looking at the S&P 500, it's closer to about 7.5%. So you're lucky to maybe get out 7% before taxes and everything else, right? And that's the truth. Most people don't even get more than 6% return on their mutual funds. It's pretty rare you'll get that long term. And some of you, you're looking at it saying, am I getting much more than zero? Which is possibly accurate. So anyways, when they talk about diversification, that is not real diversification. Diversification requires diversity among asset classes. which means now if you look at the stock market, bonds, all those kind of things, these are paper assets. These are just one type of assets. See, paper assets tanked during the last recession. So did real estate, which is a second asset class. Real estate is another asset class. Paper assets is another. Paper assets are essentially the thing that almost every financial advisor will sell you. Stocks, options, mutual funds, annuities or contracts, right? They're also paper assets. Life insurance is technically a paper asset. I mean, all these things are paper assets where you essentially have a piece of paper, but it's not like real property, right? You hold a piece of paper that says you have X amount of value in something. That's what a paper asset is. Real estate, I'm talking about the real real estate, like you have properties. Not you hold a note on a property. If you hold a note, like if you're a lender on a property, you have a paper asset. It might be backed by real estate, so there could be a little bit of somewhat of a diversity there, but you're not really into that real estate hardcore, right? It's more of a paper. You know, even tax liens, that's a paper, although you could end up holding the hard asset of the property. There's also things like business. Business is probably one of the hardest asset classes to have because it requires the most work and the time and energy, but it can be the most rewarding. Look at anybody in the Forbes 500, one thing they have in common, they all have some sort of business, right? And so definitely business is an asset class. And then the fourth asset class is commodities. This is like gold, silver, oil, corn, barley, you know, all this kind of stuff, right? All these things, and these are actually the real things. It's not like you're trading, like you're actually owning these kind of assets. It's not like you're just trading stuff. There are commodities of different sorts, right? Forex. I'm not even talking about that. That's again more of a paper asset. But when you're talking about this, like commodities, I mean, we're talking about in many cases the actual tangible stuff, or at least a representation of it. So now, do I think you should be diversified among all those classes? No, not necessarily. Now, eventually you might build up to it, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, technically I've got money in all the asset classes, right? But still, I mean, I'll tell you this, is that one of the fallacies of diversification is they tell you that you've got to, you know, put your money across all these different places. Now, remember, from a gambler's perspective, if you are gambling with your money, where you're putting it into high-risk things like the stock market, yeah, you kind of have to spread your risk out, don't you? Because you're gambling. Now, if you're doing things that have more certainty, now, for those of you that have owned businesses, you know what? I think your number one asset should be your business. That should be the number one place. That's the place you can generate and create the most money, the most cash flow and wealth quickly. I mean, what? There's not many assets where you can increase your profits and at the same time increase the value of that asset. You know, a lot of times if you increase profits, you pull the profit out, but the value stays relatively the same. Other than, like I mentioned, some commercial properties and things like that, but even those are limited. But a business, the more money you make, the more valuable you can sell it for, the more valuable it becomes. I have several dentists that I work with, and a lot of times they're like, hey, how can we get the profit of your practice up? So at some point when you decide to sell it, you would get top dollar for that practice, that asset. And then that can be turned around to create more passive income, right? You know, so definitely there's that great thing you can do. But I will tell you, it's actually okay to not be diversified. Warren Buffett's a huge preacher of this, where he says that diversification is basically admission of ignorance. If you diversify, it's because you don't know what you're doing. Or as Mark Cuban would say, diversification's for idiots. if you know who Mark Cuban is from Shark Tank, he says diversification's for idiots. Because too many people will try to get overly diversified. They spread themselves thin, and then they're really not protected. I've got some clients that will have like 30, 40 plus different investments all over the place. They won't even just do one asset class, but they'll do it among different people in the asset class. Now, granted, I think that's okay. I had one client where I said, hey, you know, this is great, but instead of putting $50,000 with each person, you've got a couple million dollars to deploy. I mean, you're creating a management nightmare with this. I said, instead, you can definitely pick a few people in every asset class that you're looking to do, a type of investments, but let's do a bigger amount towards each investment. So instead of 50,000, maybe we do 100 to 200,000 instead. So now we're not having, and keep it with certain people. So instead of just trying to spread it with all these different people, it's like, hey, pick two or three of these people max, and then invest with them. You know, and I think it's okay to stay focused. The more you're not – now, he was doing things like notes, right? So he's investing in things that other people are doing the investment. He has no control. Now, that, because there is more risk, because he doesn't have control, naturally you need to have a little bit of diversification. Now, me, like, I like to buy turnkey real estate properties. I own and control those. Even though I have a property manager that's dealing with all the issues, I still own and control those properties. I don't mind having a huge amount of my money towards that. Towards that and my business. So that's really where the bulk of my money goes. And there's a tiny piece of my portion of my money that goes in other places. But that's essentially it. Like, those are the two places I personally, now I'm not saying this is a recommendation, but I personally put my money. It's about really like how you focus and keep it controlled. If you have less risk, you don't have to diversify as much. You know, it's still good to diversify at times, but it's not about trying to spread it among all these different places. That's the big myth. Diversification, especially from a financial advising standpoint, is false because they don't even have you diversify. You're in the same asset class, market goes down, it affects you completely. And really, they're just talking about how to be a better gambler, which they don't even do a good job of teaching you that. So in any case, that's kind of my big thing on the myths or whatever. But, you know, I'll tell you, you know, the truth is you don't need to be diversified, you know, as much as you think you might. And when you do diversify, you need to diversify it in different classes. And then two, that dollar cost averaging, just remember this, buy low, sell high. Right now, market's high. Is this really the time to buy? Consider that here for this next week. I hope you make a wonderful and prosperous week. If you have any questions, you can reach out to me. Go to my website, moneyripples.com. Everybody, I hope you make a wonderful and prosperous week. We'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to The Chris Miles Money Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and make us a part of your daily routine. And check out our blogs and learn more about Chris, his services, and how we can help you at moneyripples.com. Join us next time on The Chris Miles Money Show.